You're listening to The Philip Jordan Show.
What's up, everybody? Welcome in to this week's edition of The Philip Jordan Show right here on Wiregrass Daily News Sports. I am your host, Philip Jordan, in studio host and producer of Those Wolves Football on 96.9 The Legend and Auburn writer for Last Word on College Football. We got a fun show planned for you guys today. We are going to be previewing the Final Four, and I went to my guy, Blake Lovell, the Southeastern 14. He also does an NFL podcast called Establish the Pass, but we jump into a long, lengthy part of the conversation on Alabama making their first ever Final Four. You know, before when Auburn did it 2019, that was the first time ever an Alabama State team made it to the Final Four. Now Alabama joins them there. They have got the daunting task of taking on UConn. Of course, on the other side will be Purdue and NC State. But me and Blake will talk about, we'll also talk about Auburn hoops a little bit. And then after my conversation with Blake, I am going to preview or give my things to look out for this Saturday, because the Auburn football team will be on the football field in the annual Auburn A-Day game. And I'm actually going to update you, you know, so what the Atlanta Braves been doing this week too. I mean, a lot of stuff in sports is just going on all over the place. So we got plenty of stuff to talk to you about with that.
You can check out the Philip Jordan Show podcast over at wiregrassdailynews.com or wherever you get your podcasts. If you're on Apple Podcasts, please follow, rate, and review. Leave a review, and I will read it on a future edition of this show. And if you leave just 4 stars, you are just a straight-up hater. You can email me at sports.philipjordan@gmail.com.
I bet you thought as soon as that got done playing that Blake was going to be on here with me. Not quite yet. We're not quite there yet. I just kind of wanted to give my thoughts over these matchups in the Final Four, and I won't be here too long with you before we bring Blake on to the show. But look, for Alabama, I had doubts about this team going into the tournament. You know, me and Tony Sakalas talked about this before. We talked a lot about Alabama spring. We talked Alabama basketball. And then we looked at it, and I looked at it, and I said, I don't know how far this team can go. They're 5-5 coming to tournament. They lost in the quarterfinals to Florida. Florida was just a bad matchup for them all year. I looked at it and said, yeah, they should beat Charleston, but the Grand Canyon-St. Mary's matchup, I had predicted St. Mary's to come out in that one. I thought St. Mary's would knock Alabama out. They wouldn't make it past the first weekend. Now Grand Canyon upset St. Mary. Alabama beats them 72-61 there in the second round. Beat North Carolina. Huge upset there. That was a great game, too. Grant Nelson was awesome with 24 points in that one. Key block at the end. I'm going to talk about the shots and the threes and everything else he did. A big block, big defensive play for him there in that one. And then Mark Sears has just been the guy every game. He's kind of like the guy Alabama can rely on each and every game through the tournament. But then, you know, Jerron Stevenson, the big game there against Clemson. And look, Alabama started out bad, 1 of 12. They were down 26-13. Just the way that game was going, I was like, I don't know. I think this is going to be it, because Alabama just looks like a team that the three's not going, and that's a big part of their offense. A lot of their offense, or a good bulk of their offense, obviously comes from the three. Look, Alabama's not a great defensive team. We know that. But this team is 15-1 when they make 12 or more three-pointers this past year. Led college basketball in points per game at 90.6. So this team has the offense. But now we look ahead. When they go into the matchup with UConn, this team is the Donovan Clingan. So everybody's talking about Zach Edey in the other half of the Final Four. Well, this is another 7'4" big man that is awesome. I mean, against Illinois early on in the game, I thought – UConn was going to blow the game open very early just because his dominance. It didn't happen. Illinois got back. It was 28-23 as we go into halftime. And then, boom, UConn, you know, has that 30-0 run. And they were only 3 of 17 for 3. That's what the scary part is with this team. They have other players as well in this game and on this team. Cam Spencer is a guy that can shoot the three on the season. He shot 44%. So this is a very, very tough matchup for Alabama, because UConn can defend you, and they've got guys up and down their start lineup and all the roster. They're a deep team. If Alabama, you'll hear me and Blake talk about this. We record that conversation on Monday evening, but I look at it as the Alabama cannot start the game 1 of 12 from three. They cannot start like that. UConn will jump on them, and they will not take the foot off the gas. Alabama's going to come out, pedal to the metal, push the ball. This is almost like old school with football. Like, you've got a dominant defensive or a dominant team athletically. You just want to push the ball, push tempo, almost wear them out, make them run up and down the floor. And that's going to be Alabama's game here. They're going to have to be on fire from three from the start. But if they get forced into UConn's game, I don't think this game will be much of one. The physicality, Alabama's not the most physical team up front. They just aren't. And that could cause an issue here. But if they can get UConn in a scoring match, who knows? It just may come down to who has the ball last. But if it plays more in a half court style that UConn wants to play, I think UConn's going to have this one. The other matchup, Purdue versus NC State. Look, we're all going to look at the big men in this game. Zach Edey, tremendous performance against Tennessee. 40 points in that one, 16 rebounds. He shot 22 free throws in the game, and that's the key. And I look at it on the other side, it's the DJ show for NC State. Guard DJ Horn, big man DJ Burns, who has made it clear he wants to go to the NBA, not the NFL. His name's a little mentioned with some stuff with the NFL this past week. He had 29 points against Duke, a lot of big-time shots. It's like Duke maybe was trying to go on a mini run toward the end there. He would make a big shot, get an and one, and keep Duke at distance. But he had 29 in that one, 18.3 points per game there. And this, you know, when you look at NC State, they had lost 7-9 going to the ACC tournament. They win the ACC tournament 5 games, 5 days. And now look at the run they're on, 9 games in a row. And they are the Cinderella story. But the big thing here is obviously you got DJ Burns going up against Zach Edey. If Zach Edey gets him a foul trouble, that's a big thing for NC State. But I do believe Burns has the ability to irritate and to maybe push Edey around a little bit. But he just kind of – you got to be able to be physical without getting foul trouble. And that's the thing with Edey. He's a big man. We don't see this often, but he stays out of foul trouble. He stays in the game. So that's the key there. And then if Edey is in the game – everything over Purdue revolves around that. He's the centerpiece of this whole thing. And then the players, and they are, by stats, the best three-point shooting team in college basketball. I don't think they shot the ball great against Tennessee at 41%. Let's see what DJ Horn can do now. Dalton Connect, early on, man, he hit his first 4 threes. I thought, okay, this guy is on fire. Look out. He did tell off he was 14 of 31, 6 of 12 from 3, 37 points from Dalton Connect. No one else from Tennessee really stepped up in that game, but we'll see. It's going to be interesting. I'm not going to give my prediction until after my conversation with Blake Lovell, but there. You've been delayed long enough. Here we go. Here is me and Blake Lovell talking all things Final Four and a little bit on Auburn basketball. Everybody, as I said off the top, we are down to 4 teams in the NCAA basketball tournament. We all look forward to this, but then it gets to the Final Four very, very quickly. These 3 weeks go fast. So joining me, someone that knows much, much more about college basketball than I do, that is Blake Lovell. Check him out over at the Southeastern 14, and he has an NFL podcast as well, Establish the Pass. And Blake, how you doing? I'm sure this is a tiring couple of weeks for you with the tournament going on, covering all these games, but I appreciate you coming on and help break it down for us.
Yeah, no, you got it, Phillip. I mean, it is like sometimes the SEC's kind of been left out of this thing a little bit. And so we're, you know, maybe always kind of a drought, it seems, at times with the SEC in the Final Four. But yeah, picks back up with Alabama in a, you know, a nice spot here. I don't know if nice is necessarily – it's nice to be in the Final Four. Probably drawing UConn doesn't feel as nice. But nonetheless, yeah, get the tide here. And, of course, Tennessee just came up a little bit short. But we'll see what happens. I mean, no one thought NC State could win 9 games in a row that were all elimination games to get here. So, yeah, it's going to be very interesting.
Yeah, they've been playing tournament basketball a lot longer than everybody else has. The survive and advance mantra started – at the ACC tournament for them. I mean, yeah, all these teams played in conference tournaments, but it wasn't lose or go home for them. So it's an interesting deal how they're really battle tested coming into this thing.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, and I think I saw someone, maybe an Evan Maia, put out the percentages. I think it was like a less than 1% chance that they could win 9 games in a row. And I think he had like the individual percentages of each of the games, and like there were, I want to say that 4 or 5 of them were like 25% or lower, like chance just to win that individual game. And when, so you combine that all together into 9 games. It's unthinkable that they've done this. I mean, and so, yeah, but that's what we always say, right? It's the teams that get hot at the right time. And I think that's what's interesting about Alabama, too. It's like, let's not forget, I mean, this team was not playing well entering the NCAA tournament. Like, they were not playing well at all. You know, lost, what, three of their last five in the regular season, got beat 102-88 to Florida in the SEC tournament. And now here they are. And I think that's what's fascinating to me is sometimes we try to figure out who has the advantage, the teams that play the furthest in the conference tournament or the teams that get knocked out early and maybe save your legs a little bit. And, you know, it's like, okay, Auburn goes all the way, wins the SEC tournament, but somehow they lose to Yale, right? Alabama gets knocked out early. Somehow they make this run. And then it's like, well, we throw all that out the window because NC State just won the entire ACC tournament. And now they've made an improbable run to the Final Four. So who knows? It's just random. But, yeah, that's the way it works. So,
you know, and normally if you just looked at the seeds for the question about asking, I do this a lot, I know, in college football when we get to the 14th. Always, if I have somebody on the breakdown, I say, who's your biggest surprise to be here? And yeah, if you look on paper, you say, it's got to be NC State. But like you said, Alabama was not playing well. I mean, we all would expect, I think, Purdue and UConn. Those are simple. No. You see those two teams, okay, they're into the Final Four. But like I said, Alabama was not playing well. They were 5-5, you know, coming into this thing. Like I said, two losses to Florida, an overtime win against Florida. I guess they're probably glad they didn't match up with Florida in the tournament. Yeah. That was just not their. And then they had a couple, another overtime win, I think it was against Arkansas. And then you look at NC State, like you said, they would not have been in had they not won SEC tournament. So I guess I can ask this question, who really is the bigger surprise to getting here?
Well, I mean, again, probably just from the numbers, it's NC State. But I think what I thought about that was the South. Yeah. So like what I thought about that region was, you know, you had two teams in Houston and Marquette, the top two seeds. They had entered as, you know, Houston, we knew injury issues, so the depth issues, and obviously Jamal Shedd gets injured, and that just completely changed their fortunes against Duke. But, you know, you had Colette come in with Marquette, who was, I mean, he ended up playing, I guess, but, like, you felt like that Marquette team was still missing a little something to make that true. They weren't upset-proof, I guess you could say. And so when you looked at it, and then, of course, Kentucky gets bounced in game number one against Oakland. And so your top three seeds, you're looking at them and thinking, wow, like, you know, just you're questioning the top three seeds. And so if you go beyond that, you're like, all right, well, now the path opens up for a run like this. And, I mean, I thought Duke would beat NC State. I thought it was a situation where, all right, maybe the run kind of ends here. Duke's the four seed. They make it happen. But still, again, just the probability tells you that NC State was impossible for them to do this, and they did it. But again, you talk about Alabama. I said I picked Alabama to make the Elite Eight in my bracket, and the reason I did was because I also picked Michigan State to beat North Carolina, and I thought Alabama matches up much better with Michigan State than they do with North Carolina because they've struggled against some of those like high-powered offensive teams this year, and yet they still managed to win that game. And of course, yes, things open up a little bit better at the bottom where you have Clemson coming out of it versus an Arizona or a Baylor or whatever. But you know, that was a team that had already beaten Alabama once this season. And you're wondering, is this going to happen again? Are they going to lock them down on three like Clemson did against Baylor and Arizona to get there? So yeah, it's kind of wild that these are the two teams that ultimately made it out of their respective regions, because there were a lot of things going against them coming into the NCAA tournament. And even though one was an 11, one was a 4, both felt like they were just kind of in a situation where NC State can't possibly keep this going. Alabama, can they ever figure out, you know, are they really going to be able to figure out these issues that aren't just going to beat them and end their season? So,
well, you had a lot more faith in the Crimson Tide than I did. I had them losing in the first weekend. I had them beating Charleston, but I assumed they would meet up with St. Mary's in the next round, not Grand Canyon, and which Grand Canyon did give them a decent game there. But I had St. Mary's knocking out Alabama just because I watched those St. Mary's-Gonzaga matchups at 9, 10 o'clock to come on, and you know, I'm impressed with that. How that team's always good, too. And so you were a little bit more faithful with Alabama than I was. So I'm probably just, you know, all the fans that holler Roll Tide at me, y'all can hit me up at P. Jordan SEC. I know I was wrong. It's not the first time, not the last time. But what have you seen? We talked about, again, you know, the 5-5, how Alabama came into this. What have you seen different with the Crimson Tide the way they ended the regular season in the tournament and how they played in this tournament.
Yeah, I think you have to put like the numbers in perspective here sometimes, because you are talking about a team that we're not looking at Alabama like they're a defensive juggernaut. We shouldn't look at Alabama like they're Tennessee or UConn or teams like that. Even Mississippi, like an SEC example, Mississippi State, they were a top 10 defensive team. But they've actually gotten better defensively. And I know people are going to say, well, they give up 96 to Charleston, 87 to Carolina, 82 to Clemson. But I think you have to remember that when Alabama plays a style to where they're going to give up points, even like good defensive teams are still going to probably give up some points in this particular Alabama style. Now, last year was different, right? That team was built on defense, where you had one of the best defensive teams in the country, and that was their strength, is that they weren't going to give up many points. But this year's team was built on offense, and there's no question about it. They were built to score, score, and score some more. And you knew they were going to give up points. I can remember back to last June. You know, I'm saying, I don't know that I've seen an SEC team going into a season where their weakness is as clear as Alabama's, where it's just they, I don't know how they're going to play defense. And, you know, ultimately, we got through what they were 6-5. And I remember saying this, and everybody knows what I'm going to say if you've listened to anything I've done this season, because it's the one time I guess I can pat myself on the back and say, at least I got something right about this. But I'm like, I know they're 6-5 after they lost that game to Arizona in December, but I said, I see the way this team plays offense, and they're just going to go outscore people this year. Like the rest of the way, when they get an SEC play or you get some teams trying to play grinded out styles, and all, Alabama's just going to outscore them. And that kind of is what happened, was you just saw them, the team that Alabama struggled the most against this year were the teams that could score just as well as they could. But the teams that tried to grind it out and do all this other stuff, they had no chance against Alabama because they couldn't keep up scoring-wise. And so I think the defense has been much better in this tournament. Throw out the 96 against Charleston. That game was over with 10 minutes to go in the second half. Alabama was up 30. I don't care that Charleston finished, you know, with 29 points or whatever in the final 10 minutes. It didn't matter. But you look at like the 61 against Grand Canyon. That's a team that really needed to get to the free throw line to score. And that was really the only path they had. Alabama knew that, and they were able to defend well enough to hold them to 61 points. Carolina, giving up only 87 to Carolina as a below-average defensive team like Alabama, that's fine. You'll take that. Clemson, you knew we were going to hit some shots. And so they have put in a lot more on the defensive end. And the other thing, Phillip, I think has been very clear, they have just had so many guys step up around Mark Sears. You know, they've had the Grant Nelson game. They've had the Jaren Stevenson game. You know, Griffin's made a ton of plays. Estrada's made a ton of plays. Nick Pringle's made a ton of plays. And you just keep going down the line. That's what's been most impressive, is they've just been able to have different guys step up, and that's been the big difference too. It's not just been a one-man thing to where Sears has had to do it all. And there weren't many times necessarily he had to do that this season. There were guys who stepped up, but really the defensive end has been the biggest part of this. And so, they've turned things around, and that's why they're here in this spot.
And then we just saw, you know, you talk about this offense being the catalyst of this team. Mark Sears, I mean, the game against Clemson, what, 26-13? And I'm looking up, you know, at the score, and it's, and they got the stat that says Alabama's 1 of 12 from three. I'm like, okay, is this right? Because that's the thing with Alabama. If they have a bad shooting night from three, they're pretty much toast, because that's where majority of their offense is going to come from. And then they got on fire. I mean, it seemed like at that point they had so many open threes in the corner, but like I was like, okay, they just can't make these. And then all of a sudden, talk about Stevenson, he makes a couple of them. And then, you know, he had 19 points. He was 6 of 7 for three in the game. So just the way they can just flip the switch and just come back in a hurry. And then you look at the second half, every time Clemson tried to make a run, Alabama just would respond with another three. It's just, and like you said, they got so many guys that can contribute from that spot.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing, right? And that's if, and I said this to someone, I'm like, no one is going to really give Alabama a chance in this game against UConn. And I understand, because UConn is just, they are a juggernaut, the likes of which we've not seen in a while. I mean, you know, even going back to the back-to-back Florida teams, right? Even the back-to-back Florida teams in the mid-2000s, they weren't beating teams like this. Like, they weren't just going out and obliterating their opponent the way that UConn is doing right now. And so, by the way, not to say that I'm saying these team could be better than the back-to-back Florida teams, because I still think those teams were just completely special to the point that I haven't seen another group like that. But if you look at this and you're thinking, craft me the perfect plan to beat a team like UConn, I don't know that there is a perfect plan. You look at the three losses they've had this year. They lost 69-65 to Kansas, 75-60 to Seton Hall, 85-66 to Creighton. The one common theme there is that UConn struggled to score in those three games, 60-65-66. So the perfect game plan is for Alabama to play defense the way that they played to this point. But here's what Alabama has that those three teams did not have. And don't get me wrong, a couple good defense, a couple good offensive teams in there, Kansas and Creighton. But what this team has is a three-point element, volume-wise, that you do not see very often. And so Alabama may put up 45 threes in this game. I think they should put up 45 threes in this game because I think that is your best path to being able to pull this off, knowing that, again, could they have some of those defensive issues come up and they're not perfect. They struggle to defend UConn in the half court, which, by the way, remember that too. UConn wants this to be a half court game. Alabama wants this thing to go up and down, up and down, up and down. And so I think that's what's going to really be interesting here. And it's why I think in the right circumstance, I am willing to give Alabama much more of a chance than anyone else is going to, because you do not see people play offense the way that Alabama plays offense every single time. UConn has not seen that yet. And if you get a situation where Alabama is able to get the shots they want and put up 40-plus threes, which we just saw them go, 16-40 against Clemson or something like that, 16-36, they've always got a chance when they do that. And so that's why I think they have a chance to really make this interesting, because it's like you said, they just have, I mean, they have so many guys who can step out and make a three. And if you're trading twos for threes or ones for threes, well, the numbers tell you Alabama's got an advantage there. And so, I don't hate this as much as some people do, I think. I really believe, like I said earlier, this is going to have a chance to be closer. Now, I say that, if Alabama comes out and starts 1 of 13 from 3 against UConn, they're going to get beat by 25 or more probably. Mm-hmm. That's the worry, right? And so that's what it's going to come down to. But for Alabama, it's worked out pretty well this year. If it's just a matter of, hey, can you make your threes? Because they've done that. So
I know, and a scary thing about UConn, they were like, 3 for 17 against Illinois from three. And they still, and Blake, and this is a little behind the scenes. That game went to halftime. It was 28-23. UConn's up. I said, okay, I'm going to go in the kitchen and fix me some supper. I come back and it's like a 15. I'm like, what happened? I mean, I started right when halftime started. Just go on a 30-0 run like that. And the thing too, with UConn, you mentioned, up and down. Somebody was asking me about it. And I said, Alabama's going to make a track meet. Basically, it's got to be a high-scoring, up-and-down game for them to have a shot here. Because I feel like Alabama's weakness, we saw it during the SEC play, if you do have capable bigs, and it is that slower game, I mean, Auburn gave them trouble. I mean, it's an example of a team, which is not Broome. With Klingon, if he's able to get his game going and everything they got around him, that kind of is where Alabama's weakness is. Am I correct on that?
Yeah, I completely. And look, I said, UConn hasn't seen a team like Alabama. Now, I know there will be people pointing out that will say, well, Illinois was actually the number one offensive team in KenPom's efficiency numbers heading into that game. And now they're number four based on what they did in that one. So that dropped them back a little bit. But I think the difference between Alabama and Illinois is you're talking about an Alabama team that does rely way more on the three and shoots it at a better rate than Illinois did. And so I think that is the key difference there. But like you said, it's just, if there was any team in the country, you could put them against anybody out there, Alabama, whoever, and you just let UConn execute their offensive game plan in the half court, there's nobody stopping them. Like, the way they're playing right now, I don't see a situation where you have a lot of teams who are going to be able to stop them. And I really wonder what this is going to look like from Alabama's perspective defensively as they're trying to guard Klingon, as they're trying to guard, what exactly this UConn team wants to do. Because remember, like we said, and this is what I find so fascinating, is, UConn's not giving up more than 58 points in this tournament. 52 to Stetson, 52 to San Diego State, 52 against what was the best offensive team in the country, most efficient offensive team in the country, they gave up only 52 against. And they gave up 58 to Northwestern. So that's where this one is like, are they just due to give up some points here? Because St. John scored 90 on them in the Big East tournament. Is this going to be one of those kind of games where, hey, let's go. Let's try to find the Rick Pitino model here, which again, they're going to play up and down. And that's what they did, you know, this season against UConn. But, you know, it's got to be that kind of scenario where you just have a team that comes out. I think St. John's hit 10 threes in that game, so shot it pretty well. They got a lot of offensive rebounds, and that was something I found that was pretty interesting looking back at that game. And we know, like, for Alabama, that's a team where if you are shooting as many threes as you are, there's going to be the chance for those long rebounds on the offensive side, and they've done a pretty good job this year getting offensive rebounds. So that's something else to keep an eye on here. But, look, if early on, you know, you get a situation where one of their front court guys, like a Nelson or Stevenson or, you know, whoever, right, Pringle gets in foul trouble, things become much more challenging just based on how you have to guard UConn. So,
speaking of foul trouble, that's a good segue to the other game, because that's the biggest – I think that's the biggest battle against Purdue with Edie.
Oh, yeah.
It's just – it's foul trouble. I mean, Tennessee got it. I mean, and the thing is with Edie, it's really impressive with him. He's a big – he doesn't really get a lot of fouls called on him. I mean, he pretty much stays out of foul trouble.
Trust me. But, Tennessee fans will agree with you there. They're not exactly thrilled with that, but yes.
Yeah. They were the Tennessee fans that were there on Sunday were vocal. I think there was a very sarcastic cheers when he got his first foul call late there in the game. And of course, the talent around him, you know, Braden Smith, one of them, you know, his number two, basically. I think every great big man needs a number two as that guard. Really, they remind me of like a throwback from 90s NBA, like the Rockets or a team like that. But anyways, NC State's got a big man their own. It's the DJ show, really, with NC State, DJ Horn and DJ Burns. But DJ Burns, great game, gets 29 points in that one. Just looking at this, what's the key here to you with NC State? We talked about this being the Cinderella story, the surprise team, for them to upset Purdue. Is it just stay out of foul trouble? What's the key in your mind?
Yeah, that's like, much easier said than done, right? And I think that's what it comes down to, because when you look at the volume of free throw attempts that Edie's had this season, I just don't know how you do it. How do you stay out of foul trouble? Because it just has not happened very often for anyone this season. And I think that is the big concern here for NC State, knowing that this is kind of a team where, I mean, you kind of know who they're playing at this point, right? You kind of look at this run and you see what Kevin Keats has done. They're pretty much a 6-7 guy rotation. And you've got Burns, you've got Mo Diarra, who, of course, came over from Missouri, played there last year. But this is the kind of game where I would just be, if I'm NC State, I would be a little worried, because knowing that those are the two guys who are going to have to put, and of course, they got Middlebrooks too, who's another 6'10 guy. So they've got basically 3 6'10 guys they can throw at him. And, you know, obviously Burns getting physical with Edie is going to be very important in this game, because that's the thing, right? You can flip it the other way and say, what happens if one of these guys, what if Burns gets Zach Edie in foul trouble, which has not happened very often? Mm-hmm. How much does that change what Purdue can do? Because I think outside of that, you mentioned Smith. Yeah, they've got him. But outside of that, what are they going to do offensively if he's not on the floor? It completely changes everything they want to do. So that's what I'm really curious to see, how Kevin Keats kind of puts this game plan together, knowing that NC State's a team that is pretty aggressive. Like, they're not a team like an Alabama who's going to shoot a lot of threes. I think it was where they get 53.5% of their points from two. That's top 100 nationally. So they really like to get the ball and score inside the arc, which that's also the question. I mean, Tennessee did too, right? And it's like, but when you know Edie's standing in there, and you know how challenging it's going to be to even pull a rebound if you do miss a shot, because he's going to snag it, it's hard. It's hard to know what the right game plan is from that standpoint. But it's the same kind of thing. You know, Tennessee wanted to get up and down the floor, not make this just a half-court game. NC State wants to get up and down the floor. I don't think they want to just do this in the half court, because that's not the path to success by any means. And so, you know, I think that's what it comes down to. You need some easy transition points. And you've got to keep your big guys out of foul trouble, because, you know, it's like you look at the numbers, like for a Tennessee, Adu, just two bad games this year against Purdue. And then it's like Awaka also fouls that, like, you know, and they're just, you're having to keep going down the line and going down the line. And knowing this is an NC State team that really does, like I said, rely on kind of this same group. It's a pretty predictable rotation where it's going to be seven guys. Somebody gets in foul trouble. What happens? And I just don't think you can afford that against Purdue. But the problem is, how do you avoid it? I don't know how. And so that's the big problem for NC State here. I don't know how they're able to keep Zach Edey from dominating this game, because a lot of other teams haven't been able to do it either. But this just feels like a matchup where it's not in NC State's favor.
Yeah, obviously Purdue is on their Virginia redemption tour here right. after
yep.
getting I'm sorry, Auburn fans, for mentioning Virginia. I know that's 2019 is still a sore subject, but still, you know, it's kind of interesting. And, you know, I look at Burns too as this. He seemed like to me he does have the kind of body type. If he is on Edey, maybe yep. he can be a little bit physical with without fouling and kind of not let Edey get where he wants to get, because obviously when you watch him play, he's got spots on the floor where he wants to get. You know, there's certain yeah. sides, you know, or where, how close he wants to be to the basket. If you can slightly push him, maybe out, get him out of his comfort zone a little bit, I could, you know, frustrate him. And then what happens when a big guy usually gets frustrated? On the yeah. other side, he starts committing fouls. So I don't know. Maybe NC State needs to get the psychological game going on here.
Well, you know, Tennessee tried that. I mean, even like they brought in J.P. Estrella, who, you know, has not played a ton, but that's because AD was in foul trouble and, you know, he had other guys. Like, he was physical with Edey. I mean, it's a mismatch, but he was bumping him around. You could tell he wasn't thrilled about it. So Burns is a much bigger guy. And so I think that's where, like you said, you just, you know, just body him on every single play. And that's going to frustrate him because he's not used to that, especially with a guy like that, with the size that Burns has. So, yeah, that's. As always, like, this is what I love about the Final Four. When you get these kind of matchups, it's like I want to know what the coaches are thinking right now. Like, what have they identified to where they see, ooh, that's where we can exploit that. Like, we have found the weakness, or we have found this one area that nobody else is seeing. How do we take advantage of that? That's what I always find interesting in these games.
And if the favorites win, we'll get a matchup of 2 7-foot-4 centers. So that will be a fun part. But as we know, this tournament never goes how you expect to go. Kept a few minutes over. You got one more. You got time for an Auburn question.
Oh, yeah. I'm fine.
All right. So the Auburn Tigers. And disappointment. This was a team. And we mentioned off the top, a team that went through the SEC tournament, won it. I mean, look, you can also look at it. They were very fortunate that Tennessee and Kentucky gets knocked out. So, you know, this kind of helped a little bit, especially they would have matched up with Tennessee there in the semifinals. But still, you know, they haven't made it past the first weekend since 2019. They get knocked out against Yale in the first round, last 2 years, second round. What has been the biggest issue for this team, and where does Bruce Pearl need to take this team? Where does he need to improve this team to get them past? Because we know every year he has the talent.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, a pretty common theme for the good teams he's had, you know, they've been great defensively, and I think that's always helpful. And I think, you know, sometimes they're a little underrated offensively, it feels like, because they've had to do it in a different way the past several years versus the Final Four team. And I think that, to me, is the one thing I would say is the year they go to the Final Four, they were as good as anybody in what category? They were shooting the ball as well as anybody out there. Mm-hmm. And this year's team took a significant step forward. They shot at 35% this year from three. But, like, you look at the teams before that, right? 31.5%, 31.8%, 32.6%, 30.6%. So I think that's what, you know, you think about watching Jared Harper and Bryce Brown and all those guys kind of being able to make big shots from three. And I think, look, I mean, I hate to do this, but it's like, look at the Alabama example, right? Oh, I mean, Alabama, look, you mentioned earlier, it's like they have multiple guys who can step out and hit threes. And I think that's what I would like to see, like, from Bruce Pearl, like, building a team like that again, because it felt like that was more along the lines of how his teams used to play, right? Even go back to some of the Tennessee teams. I mean, not all of them. You know, the year they got to the Elite Eight of Tennessee, they weren't a great shooting team, but they had Chris Lofton, and so they had someone that just was an absolute, you know, could just knock down shots from anywhere. And I think that's kind of what I find. And look, the randomness, too, just factors in, where sometimes you get the wrong draw and you just can't advance in the tournament. But I think that is one thing I'd love to see them prioritize guards who can shoot the ball. And I'm not to say they haven't, right? I mean, Denver Jones can make shots. Holloway's made shots. But I want to see how that continues to evolve. They took a step forward this year, like I said, but how do they now become like a top 25 three-point shooting team out there? Because as we've seen, that can make up for a lot of deficiencies. And again, I hate to use Alabama example with Auburn, but it's true. I mean, like we said, they're here not because they are very good defensively. It's just because they can overwhelm teams offensively. And sure, you'd love to have both. You want a balanced team that can do everything. But I think the way this game is played now, you know, maybe you need more than just guys who sometimes, you know, can't give you that next gear offensively. And I think, look, we've talked about their guard play in recent years too. I mean, it's they've had some good guards, but it is something where they've had big men though that are just special. And but it all we always say guards win in March, and I feel like that's this year. It's kind of interesting, right? Because of Edie and going in and all. Not, but they have good guards though. I mean, those teams also have good guards, and so yeah. But I think that's it. I don't know that I read too much into it, other than the fact that it just happens when you get in the NCAA tournament. Sometimes you just get the wrong draw, you get upsets happen. But I'd love to see them continue that path of taking a huge jump. They jumped 200 spots in three-point percentage this year. I'd love to see them continue forward as like a top 30 type three-point shooting team, because I think that that can make up for a lot of different things. So,
yeah, it'd be interesting. And it's look, we're focused on Alabama, but you know, I just had to throw the Auburn stuff out there. Just, you know, as like once again another really good season. That's the sad thing, that you know, an SEC tournament championship season is always a good season to celebrate, but when you get knocked out first round and your in-state rival is in the Final Four, it doesn't make for a happy feeling at this point anyways. Maybe a little bit we get closer next season, everybody will look back at this year as a better year. But Blake, it's been fun. I told you we've almost done 30 minutes. I always appreciate you come on. Whatever we're talking about, it's always a great conversation. But if people wanted to follow you online, where can they find you and all the work you're doing?
Yeah, always appreciate it, Philip. Yeah, if you want our SEC stuff, Southeastern 14 on YouTube, you can find us there. Yeah, covering it all. We'll be covering Alabama in the Final Four, of course. And, yeah, lots of off-season basketball stuff in addition to SEC football, baseball as well, of course, too. Yeah, everything else, you can find me on Twitter at the Blake Lovell.
All right, sounds good, Blake. Once again, appreciate the time, and I look forward to talking again sometime down the road.
You got it, Philip.
All right, and as always, thanks to Blake for coming on the show again. Always fun to talk with Blake, whatever we're talking about. I mean, he's college basketball and SEC hoops, but always fun to have him on. And so by the time we talk again here on the podcast, we will know who our college basketball national champion is. And I am going to go with the championship game. I think it's going to be – look, I'm going to go chalk here. I think it's going to be UConn versus Purdue. I think UConn goes back-to-back. This team's too good. And until somebody even hangs with them, I'm not going to think any differently on that. Oh, now Alabama is not the only team in the state still playing postseason basketball right now. The Troy women in the women's NIT, they are still going strong. They won against Louisiana Monroe at home on Monday night, 89-75, to advance to the semifinals. And they once again will be at home. They will host Minnesota, who's 19-15 on the year, at 6 o'clock. Now, obviously, everybody, if you're in a Wiregrass area, you can get to Troy. Go to Troy. Go support the Trojans on Wednesday night. But if not, you can watch it at 6 o'clock on ESPN+. They will face the winner between St. Louis and Vermont, who play at 5 o'clock on Wednesday on ESPN+. The championship game will be Saturday at 2 o'clock on the CBS Sports Network. So go and check that out. All right, I'm going to take a quick 1-minute break. And when we come back, I will give some stuff to look forward to this Saturday with the Auburn A-Day game. And also just kind of like give you a review of how the Braves are doing so far. The baseball season opened up for them last week. Just kind of give you an idea where they're at, where they stand as we sit here on a Wednesday morning. You're listening to the Philip Jordan Show on Wiregrass daily news.
96.9, The Legend is your connection to classic country legend. But Digio Strategies has other options too. News Talk 103.9 is your source for America's top news and entertainment shows like Rick and Bubba in the Morning, Glenn Beck from 9 till 11 a.m., and Clay Travis and Buck Sexton middays from 11 a.m. till 2 p.m. Sean Hannity, Lars Larson, Ben Shapiro, Matt Walsh, and others fill your day with the latest news and views from America's top conservative voices. America at Night and Coast to Coast AM keep you company and connected throughout the night. Plus, Fox News, the Alabama Radio Network, and Wiregrass Daily News keep you informed with national, international, state, and local news. And with more musical choices like All the Hits, 106.7 KMX, Today's Country, 95.5 WTVY, and Music 107.7. Digio Strategies gives you more choices and more variety. Listen on air, online, and on our apps. 96.9 The Legend is just the beginning.
All right, let's quickly close things up. Just Auburn spring game this Saturday, 1 o'clock. If you're not going to the game, you can watch it on SEC Plus. It's streaming. I'm sure later on they'll put it on the proper TV network and air it there. But 1 o'clock, ESPN Plus, SEC Network Plus. So Auburn will hit the field. I will have more on this next week. I'll give my thoughts, my takeaways from the Auburn spring game as well. We'll be looking back at the national championship game, and then we got a bunch of spring games the following Saturday. So we got a lot of stuff coming your way next week on the pod. May have a loaded episode of the Philip Jordan Show. What are we looking at for Auburn? Obviously, quarterback Peyton Thorne, see how he does. You got to think that he's the guy for the job, like it's his job to lose. And honestly, I feel like he will be day one starter when Auburn opens up the 2024 football season. But Hank Brown, see what he can do. You know, a lot of excitement at the end of the bowl game there against Maryland. Obviously, Auburn lost, so not a good thing for them there. But still. Also, receivers. I want to see what Cam Coleman, see what some newcomers do, the old stays, the guys there. I want to see how they're using Rivaldo Fairweather. Let's see how they do. I mean, and look at this, a spring game. You're not going to see a lot. It's like NFL preseason. Not going to show a lot. You don't want the opponents to see what they're working on. But Hugh Freeze calling the plays and all that stuff, and just the new defense coaches. And I want to see the DBs. Keontae Scott is really the only experience they've got coming back in the secondary. Let's see how these guys can acclimate. There's just a few things to look for this weekend as Auburn plays spring game. Clemson is also playing their spring game. I think NC State's playing as well. So I'm gonna try to check out as much stuff as I can with the Final Four. That, go watch WrestleMania. More of that in a second. The Atlanta Braves. Now, we'll try to at least once a week give a little update on what the Braves are doing from time to time. We may bring somebody in to talk Atlanta Braves. Not right now with spring football, the draft, Final Four. It'd be more of a summertime thing. And then, of course, in October, the Braves really make a run, which we think they will because they have one of the best lineups in all baseball. I mean, this team could just score runs. But it's 3-2 right now. They opened up in a three-game stretch against the Phillies. They have not played at home yet. They will have their home opener on Friday against Arizona. 6:20 is first pitch, our time, Central Time. They beat Philadelphia 9-3 and 12-4 in the first two games, so the bats were exploding. Game three, they lost 4-5. Now they're in a series with the White Sox. On Monday, they won 9-0. But then last night on Tuesday, they lost 2-3. So they will play on Wednesday at 1:10. So see if the Braves can kind of reverse that, get the 4-2 as they go back home. And looking at the standings right now, Atlanta is 3-2. The Phillies are 2-3. Washington is 1-3. The New York Mets, they're 0-4. And then Miami is 0-6. So that's look at that. And also, I would be a mistake to not mention that yesterday, the women's Final Four coming up this weekend. On Friday, you'll have the Final Four. NC State playing South Carolina. That would be 6 o'clock over on ESPN. Then UConn, Iowa. Everybody's going to want to see that because Caitlin Clark, 41 points against LSU. Revenge game from last year's national championship. They're in the Elite Eight on the women's side of things. Then the national championship game will be played 2 o'clock Central Time Sunday on ABC. Check that out. Now, this is not the only podcast that will be in this feed this week. I will be dropping a bonus pod, something I do once a year. This is not a topic we're going to talk about on a regular basis, but it's a very, very big event, and I am little nerdy about it, just to be honest. So we're going to talk about it. Me and a buddy of mine, Brendan Eisman, we will be previewing the other big events coming Saturday and Sunday, WrestleMania. Look, we're in the Dustin area. Everybody around here loves wrestling. So we'll be doing that. That'll be on the feed. We will record that, stream it too. We're going to stream it live. That's the plan. Thursday night, it will probably be in the podcast feed on Friday morning. But Thursday night, we will be previewing, talking about WrestleMania. So look forward to that. And go check out my other podcast, the Spring Football Report. That's something separately I do from here at Wiregrass Daily News. But still go check it out, where I talk all things United Football League during the season. Kind of, if you've ever listened to the Wiregrass High School Football Report, really similar to that format. So go check it out. Anyways, I'm going to get out of here. Hope everybody has a great weekend. There's a lot of big stuff to talk about and look forward to for next week. I'm already excited for next week's podcast, just because we've got so much to go over what's going to go down this weekend. Anyways, remember, you can follow me on social media at PJordanSEC. The podcast is available on all your favorite podcast platforms, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcast. From Apple Podcasts, please follow, rate, and review. Leave a review. I may read it on a future edition of the show. And if you leave those 4 stars, you are just a straight up hater. You can email me at sports.philipjordan@gmail.com. You check out all my written work over at Last Word on college football. Till next time. Bye bye.